Listeners, and welcome to another edition of the Built from the Border podcast. I am your host, Tom Randolph, and today I'll be flying solo, doing my first show on my own. Just wanted to try this out and see how it was going to go, see if it's something I can do and sustain for the foreseeable future when I can't get my good buddies to come on the show with me, that those being Brody and Tommy mainly, and then now Mark Hart, who's the new addition. I'll be adding some more people to the podcast as people get a little more busy, a little more preoccupied with some things going on in the fall, myself included, as I started my first week of law school at the University of Missouri Kansas City School of Law this week. It's been a little bit of a whirlwind. The last 2 days have been orientation schedules, chalked from 8 o'clock till about 4:30 in the afternoon. So I'm processing a lot of information right now, but that doesn't mean I don't have time to break and talk a little sports with you guys this afternoon. So, Royals news first. Omar Infante scratched from tonight's lineup due to back spasms. And I think this is, you know, one of those cases where you see why the trade for Ben Zobrist was made, because you never know what's going to happen on a day-to-day basis, even in the playoffs, when you have a night off between games. But Ben Zobrist, best utility guy in the league, and we've got him starting tonight at second base for the Royals. And that's something that we may realistically see later on in the season as we get into those dog days of September and the final days of August. See him pick him up a few more starts. It'll be interesting to see how it shakes out when Gordon comes back from injury, because we've talked about it for a little bit. You know, who will get demoted down to the minors, who's going to fill in where. And I think Yost will probably just go off of who's hot at the time. You know, we saw the way that Rios had that surge after the Gordon injury, at least from an offensive standpoint. But I think we know just from a few games this year where there's some pretty terrible defensive plays, and just on a consistent level of defensive play, Rios is definitely a downgrade from the other guys you have in the outfield, those being Jared Dyson, Paulo Orlando, and Ben Zobrist, who can all play that right field position. I think we're going to probably – you'll see Gordon it'll be a slow transition as he kind of reacclimates to the ball club and reacclimates to playing every day after that groin injury. So enough about the present state of the Royals' health. Let's talk about the present state of the just team makeup right now, and most notably the makeup of the bullpen. We saw some bullpen struggles from the squad this past weekend against the Angels. You know, when we got off to that 5-1 lead late in the sixth against the Angels in, I believe, the second or third game of that series, I turned off the TV. I thought the game was over. I figured that the trio of Herrera, Hollander, Davis probably wouldn't even really have to come into the game at that point. And in fact, we squandered a 6-run lead, you know, a 4-run lead with earned runs given up by both Davis and Holland during that time. No one had homered against Wade Davis since Ian Desmond on August 24th, and that was a stretch of 477 batters that was busted on August 1st by Jose Bautista. And then we saw another Cole Calhoun home run in that game off of Davis, and that homerless streak only lasted 13 batters. I think this isn't a point of concern for Wade Davis, especially because he's working his way back from those back issues that he had been having for the last couple weeks, and we've tried to keep him out of action to help that injury heal. Now, he was leaving some pitches up and in the zone. I think that's something that he can probably remedy. I think Herrera, the struggles aren't really as glaring as those of Holland and Davis, because Herrera still is in – for all intents and purposes, a middle relief guy, because he comes on in that sixth and seventh inning, and then, you know, you can get into late relief situations when you're trying to hold the lead, or you know, hold the tie over to the bottom of the inning in a ninth inning or an extra inning game. I think the main point of concern has to be with Holland. He's blown 2 of 9 save opportunities while allowing 22 base runners in 10 innings. He blew a save on August 13th when the Royals lost a game we'd led after 8 innings for the first time since May 5th, 2014. I mean, think about that. It's been nearly a season and a half since this Royals squad lost a game that they had led after 8 innings. That's almost unheard of. And I think the main issue that you see with Holland now is his fastball velocity, dropping from about 97 miles an hour to about 94, 95, although it's come back up as he started to get more healthy. But he's still struggling with that location. I think that this is just a window, and I'm glad that we're getting this out of the way now. I don't think that this is something you're going to see as a consistent trend throughout the playoffs, because I think history shows us, at least with these three guys, as you know, the HGH three-headed monster, that they're not prone to this type of collapse that often. And I don't want to say collapse because it really isn't a collapse, but it's a little bit of a shaky stretch for them right now. Because when you consider a six-month season, you're going to have ups and downs. And the Royals have had a limited amount of downs this during this season. But, you know, there is reason to be concerned. But I think it's mostly with Greg Holland. I think the issues that are plaguing Davis and Herrera are correctable. Holland, we'll see about that location, because that's been an issue that's plagued him really since the start of the season. So, you know, obviously we'll check back in and see how they're doing. There's a lot at stake for this team. I think, you know, I was listening to 610 this morning. Fesco was talking about anything less than a World Series championship this year is a disappointment. I don't disagree with him. I do think that the goal is to get back to the World Series. And once you get there, it's kind of, you know, everything else is icing on the cake. But you never know what's going to happen in October. A lot of crazy things can happen. And certainly one of the things you don't want to have is an uncertain bullpen. I think the Dodgers last year and the Tigers showed us that no matter how good your regular season is, if you don't have that bullpen to support your team in late inning situations, then that's a recipe for potential disaster. And the Royals, they score more runs than anyone else in the first inning. That's where they get their lead. The next highest inning where they have runs scored is the sixth inning. That's their second highest run scoring inning. So the Royals batting order knows how to get to bullpen pitching. And the reason that we've been so successful is because at the same time that our batters are getting to their bullpen after getting to their starters, our bullpen is coming in and basically shutting down the opposing offense. And that's why we've had that recipe for success. So we definitely need these bullpen guys to be healthy to ensure that World Series run is something that's highly realistic and highly probable, because I think most fans can agree with me. We definitely want to see the Royals back in the World Series, and we'd be even more excited to see the Royals matched up with our cross-state compatriots or rivals, as some would say, in the St. Louis Cardinals. As I've gotten older, I've come to tend to disagree with that notion that the Cardinals are somehow a rival, but I didn't grow up with them as a rival, nor did I grow up seeing them play them in the World Series. So we'll see. I know I'm getting a little off base here. And that's why I like having those other guys with me. So they keep me on track, they keep me on target, and they have some conversations that we can kind of throw around the room. But I'm trying my best here to try and keep this succinct, accurate, and entertaining for you guys. So looking forward to the Royals' schedule, they play a two-game set against the Reds tonight and tomorrow. It bummed me out yesterday not being able to watch the Royals. You know, you'd think on a Monday evening, you know, after a long Monday, sitting through classes and sitting through orientation speeches and everyone telling you how difficult the next 3 years are going to be, you just want to sit down, have a nice cold beer, and watch the Royals play. Instead, I had to watch the Cardinals play against the Giants, which wasn't terrible. And I, you know, it's, if you're going to watch two teams play, those are the two teams that in the National League that you probably are going to want to watch play, teams that really play baseball the right way. But I was bummed to not see the Royals in action last night. But they play tonight against the Reds, and Johnny Cueto is making his first trip back to Cincinnati since becoming a Royal. So it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that goes. He won't be making a start there, but he's returning to the stadium, and I'm sure that at some point he'll get addressed, he'll get some boos, he'll get some cheers. But it's going to be an interesting series. I think the Royals should take both games against Cincinnati, but again, you never know. We've got Volquez and Guthrie towing the mound for the Royals, so we're kind of getting back to the bottom of that rotation. And talking about what we talked about last week, Royals play very few above 500 opponents, and the Reds are not among them. Among their remaining opponents, we have the Red Sox, Orioles, Rays, Tigers, White Sox, Twins, Indians, and Mariners. Those are our final opponents for the season. You don't see any Angels on there. You don't see any Rangers on there. No Yankees, no Blue Jays. No Astros. The time to get to that upper 90s win total is now. And I don't think it's unrealistic to expect this team to get there. I will be disappointed if this team does not win more than 94 games. I'll set that number out. I'll set that as the magic number for this team for this season. Because considering how bad the rest of the division is, the Royals have all but sealed their American League Central championship. I mean, they're 12 and a half games above the Twins, 15 games above the Tigers, 15 and a half above the White Sox, and 16 above the Indians. They're not relinquishing that lead. We have the second best. We're tied for the second best home record in Major League Baseball this season with the Los Angeles Dodgers. We're tied with the Dodgers, and we're right behind the St. Louis Cardinals. You know, this team should win that many games. I'd have to check the pacing to see where they're at, but they should win at least 94 games this season. And that'd be exciting. It'd be the most wins I'd ever seen in a season in my lifetime. And for a lot of people, it would be. And I want to address this interesting story that kind of came out last week about the Royals baby boom and how there was a hospital out in Shawnee that had actually encountered a significant rise in the number of babies born in their hospital. In fact, it broke their previous record for that month by, I think, about almost 30 newborn babies, which is impressive. And among some of the names, it was interesting. You know, there was a young player whose first name was Finnegan, named after the recently traded Brandon Finnegan, who, you know, at the time that his heroics occurred in that wild card game against the Oakland A's, I said that I'd name my first son Brandon Finnegan Randolph, and someone did. So that was an interesting story, and it was kind of funny just to hear that as the theory to why that happened, and that some of the babies were just kind of, you know, game six victory celebrations. That's always interesting to hear. But apparently none of the other Kansas City area hospitals experience a similar uptick in the number of newborn babies, but still an interesting story nonetheless. I also want to point out one more thing before we change gears from baseball, because I've had a bone to pick with Sports Illustrated since about the start of the year. Because whoever wrote their preseason prediction story where they predict who the divisional winners would be and who the playoff teams would be and the wild card teams and the eventual league championship series teams and the eventual World Series teams. Well, I won't go into too many of the specifics, but I just want to point out that the Royals were not included in the playoff picture. In fact, the brilliant writing staff at Sports Illustrated picked them to finish fourth. And in their infinite wisdom, they also had an excellent World Series pick, almost as excellent as them picking the Royals to finish fourth in the American League Central. Their picks were the American League Central last place team, the Cleveland Indians, and the barely hanging on for fourth place in the National League East team, the Miami Marlins, both of whom have yet to win 60 games this season. Both of whom are below 500. Both of whom have pretty piss-poor win differentials. They're in the negative. And both of them have no chance of making playoffs this year. Just want to point that out. You pick the Royals to not make the playoffs, and you pick two of the worst teams in baseball to make the World Series. I'm not saying it's time for Sports Illustrated to reevaluate the talent that they have over there, because I love Sports Illustrated. I love reading them. I used to have my entire wall as a kid plastered with Sports Illustrated covers. So my mother told me I had ruined the paint in there and that we had to take them all down. But that's a different story for another time. But I think it's really, you know, it's a poor assessment of the talent that not only the Marlins and the Indians were devoid of from an offensive and a pitching perspective, but it was a misrepresentation of the high level of talent that the Royals had. And I'm probably putting on my hometown bitterness pants here and just trying to make a point that's already been made by probably several other media outlets. Not that I would refer to our podcast or our website as a media outlet, but other people that talk about sports have talked about this already. Just want to point it out, because it's always fun for me to bring that little story up, but we haven't yet on the podcast. Now I want to move over to
Chiefs action. They opened up their preseason slate of games against the St. Louis Cardinals at the away. They played down in Arizona, the University of Phoenix Stadium in Phoenix. Chiefs won handedly, but it's preseason, so it doesn't really matter. But there were some pretty cool moments in the game against the Cardinals. Notably, it was the return of Eric Berry to the field for the Kansas City Chiefs for the first time since being diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma last fall. A special moment. Another special moment was to see Derek Johnson and Mike DeVito, both who suffered season-ending injuries last year, both tearing their Achilles tendons. And a cool moment because of where these guys are at in their careers. Derek Johnson turns 33 this November. He's 15 tackles away from the Chiefs' all-time career tackles mark. Mike DeVito, 31, has been an important part of this Chiefs defense for the last three seasons. When you're at that age and you have that type of injury, to have to come back from that is probably challenging. And I think it probably would have been significantly more difficult if they didn't have another teammate that was going through it with them. And I think you need these games, whether or not that you are coming back from you know, a season-ending injury. But for Derek Johnson and Mike DeVito, it meant a little bit more. They needed to get some game prep under their belt. They needed to get back out there and see that, you know, get the confidence back in their legs and get back in there with the first team. And they, you know, they played their two series. That's usual for those first preseason games. But they'll see more snaps in the preseason. I'm sure that Andy Reid and his staff are going to be sure to make their transition back as seamless and as you know, low impact as possible. But it was a good game to watch. You know, two young receivers played exceptionally well with the second unit, which those were Fred Williams and Frankie Hammond. You know, Chase Daniel and Andy Reid both raved about their performance, and you know, I think it's safe to say you could rave about Chase Daniel's performance against the Cardinals, threw for three touchdowns on Saturday night. And Daniel, you know, the consummate professional, couldn't stop raving about how well the two players played, and that those being Fred Williams and Frankie Hammond. And I think when you have, and I know the addition of Jeremy Maclin gives us more a more high profile receiver, but when you have somewhat of a depleted receiving core, it's nice to have guys in the preseason against the second unit, which is still some very quality players, play some impressive action. Fred Williams is a former Arena League receiver who joined the practice squad back in December of 2013, caught the attention of the coaching staff, especially Andy Reid, with his athleticism and his natural feel to play the wide receiver possession. And I think he gives a lot of energy to this offense, and I'm excited to see how they'll be implemented maybe in the regular season, if they do in fact make the roster. Because, as we know, there's no guarantees. There are no guarantees in football. But I think in the type of offense that we're looking to play, a guy with that kind of quick burst athleticism is going to be an important part of the offense. And we'll see. We've got some explosive guys at receiver this year in terms of speed. When you think about Maclin and Chris Conley and DeAnthony Thomas, I mean, those are some burners right there. You know, I look at Jason Avant as more of a possession receiver, and who knows if Jason Avant will make the roster. And who knows? Frankie Hammond and Fred Williams might be trying to take his job right now. Albert Wilson showed a lot of market improvement last year, but he seems like more of a possession guy, even given his stature. So we'll see. It's exciting to have those kinds of options. But it was an impressive first game for the Chiefs. Andre Ellington did run for a nice little touchdown against the Chiefs in the first quarter of yesterday, or of Saturday's game, you know, the first score of the game. But the Chiefs, you know, they bounced back as good teams need to do. You know, in talking about what the Royals need to do to make this season a success, I think that the Chiefs, to make this season a success, considering the talent that they've added and the talent they've brought back and the progression that we expect these players to go through, is that we should win a playoff game this season. You know, and that's, I don't think that's too lofty of an expectation. I think it's a high expectation. But I think the Chiefs should win a playoff game this year. And it really depends on how this year shakes out. I think this is the Chiefs' chance to win the AFC West. And I think a lot of other people would agree with me. I don't think I'm making a bold statement by saying that. You know, the offensive line of the Broncos has suffered some injuries. Peyton Manning's getting older. I think he's one hit away from potentially his career being over. They lost Julius Thomas, who was a big, big threat for them on the offensive side, both literally and figuratively last year, and the part that he played in the offense, and his stature as well. You know, Demaryius Thomas just got his contract. I'm not saying that's going to impact his play, but he was playing for a contract last year. Wes Welker, his health is always up in the air. Emmanuel Sanders is a talented receiver, and then, you know, the running, they seem to always reload at running back. But and the Broncos have a great secondary and front seven. But I think that this is the Chiefs' year to beat them, because I don't think the Broncos are as I think they're more fragile than people try to let on. And I think they're one Peyton Manning big hit away from their season being over. And again, I don't want to, you know, take anything away from the charge of the Raiders by not going and talking about their strengths and weaknesses at length, but I don't think that they pose much of a threat to the Chiefs or the Broncos in this division. I think that the true moment, the true test this season, at least the first real one, will come on Thursday night in week two as the Broncos venture into Arrowhead, and it'll give the Chiefs an opportunity to try and beat the Broncos for the first time during Peyton Manning's tenure as quarterback for the Denver Broncos. And like I said on the podcast a few weeks ago, when me and Tommy Watson predicted our game-by-game wins and losses, and I think that's a game the Chiefs will win because of the atmosphere that'll be there on that Thursday night. But again, great action out of the first preseason game. It's always good to see football back on the field again. And the NFL Network is doing a great job of getting all those games to you. They're live from multiple training camps, and they're showing almost every single preseason game this year on the NFL Network. So you're not short on football action. It's not football action that really matters significantly, unless you've got players getting hurt, but and position battles and whatnot. But it's fun to watch football on again. Transitioning away from professional football, I'm starting to talk about college football. We're less than 1 month away from the start of the college football regular season. And for those listeners who don't know, because I haven't talked to it at length, I am a KU football fan. I'm a tortured soul. I've had to endure the last couple years of pure embarrassment and just piss poor football for the better half of a decade after the collapse of the Mark Mangino empire regime, whatever you want to call it. I didn't think that guy deserved to lose his job. I'll say it again. I liked Mark Mangino. And I don't think he should have lost his job just because he was hard on players and said the things that they probably didn't want to hear. But I am excited for new Kansas head coach Dave Beatty to step in and take the reins of a program that desperately needs it. And I think he's shown through some of the guys that he's gotten to transfer into the university as transfer players. He's shown that he's got a commitment to bring in real talent with this football team. And he's handcuffed right now. A lot of fans don't realize that the Turner Gill and Charlie Weiss era left this team with virtually, sanctions imposed, not actual sanctions. But when you leave a program and you leave 50 roster spots to fill, or 45 roster spots to fill, and you only are allowed to fill 25 scholarships per year, well, what does that happen to the other 15 to 20 scholarships? They go away. You don't get to use those. You have to bring in walk-ons, transfers. You don't get to use those on freshmen coming out of high school. You don't get to use those as guys that become program guys for the next 4 years. You get to use it on a guy who you say, yeah, you got a spot this year. Thanks for filling in until we get someone better. Or a transfer that says, transfer is different. Transfer is a guy you really want. And not saying you don't want walk-on players, because they can be some of the most important players on a team. I mean, look at Ryan Mueller, who played defensive end at the University or Kansas State University. He's got a shot to make the Chargers this year, and he was a walk-on at K-State. So walk-ons can make an impact. Bill Snyder's shown that time and time again with the quality of walk-ons he brings in to Kansas State. But you have to realize that Bill Snyder is going to bring a different quality of walk-on into his program than first-year head coach Dave Beatty at the University of Kansas is going to bring into his program. You're not going to get the cream of the crop of walk-ons. You're not even going to get the cream of the crop of walk-ons in the state of Kansas or Missouri. Because guess who gets those guys? Gary Pinkel and Bill Snyder. Hopefully, Dave Beatty can institute a culture at KU where we do get those guys. We don't have guys leaving the state. We can steal some of those guys from the Kansas City and St. Louis schools. Shane Ray should have gone to Kansas. Instead, he ended up in Missouri. He was a MEAH guy. He should have gone to Kansas. Anyways, I'm excited for this season. One, because I might actually get to see some more home games this year. Probably a lot of losses. I was in Vegas a few weekends ago, and their over-under for the year was 1.5. I thought about taking the under, but I didn't want to be that much of a pessimist. Although, my uncle took the under, and I think he was probably a genius for doing so. The only winnable game, realistically, on that schedule is the South Dakota State game, and they probably can beat us. We didn't want to start Cozart this year, but Cummings went down with an injury that's going to keep him sidelined for a while, and Cozart's going to start. That alone, I think, takes your win total down about 1 or 2 games at least. Cozart's good for about 1 or 2 bonehead plays that cost you a game per season, if any given week. And I'm hard on him, but he's had 2 years to try and figure it out. He's incapable of rolling to his left side. And he's going to be the starting quarterback for week 1. But I think Dave Beatty will probably try and invoke some sort of approach that's a conservative offense that doesn't put too much responsibility in the hands of Cozart. We'll probably run a lot. But I think it's what we should have been doing last year. When you have the talented Corey Avery in the backfield, you should run the ball more. Let's start there. But this Kansas team has lost a lot of talent when you think about who departed last year. A lot of really quality talent. And when you think about how much talent we had, it's almost frustrating that we didn't win more games. Ben Heaney, NFL. Dexter McDonald, NFL. Ja'Cory Shepherd, NFL. And those are just 3 guys who got drafted. You've got guys who are in training camp this season. Jimmy Mundine, yeah, he's behind a considerable amount of people for the tight end job for the Patriots. But he's another guy who played tight end, who set the school record for receiving yards by a tight end, for receptions by a tight end last season for the Jayhawks, and he's on an NFL roster. So we had some talented guys. We didn't have the quarterback position filled out, and we couldn't figure out how to stick to a consistent offensive scheme. And when we could run the ball down a team's throat for the first 3 quarters of the game, we decided to start passing the ball at the start of the 4th quarter. But I'm excited. I think that Beatty will bring a new culture. And I think while this season might be rough, it's all about considering where you're going to be at in the future. And I want to be optimistic because I'm tired of being the laughingstock of the country. And I'm tired of being the boot heel of the Big 12. So hopefully some things change for this Jayhawks team. And I think that they will. But I think it just might take some time. I blame Charlie Weiss for most of the universities or most of the program's problems at this point. Because the guy's just collecting checks now from both Notre Dame and KU. So my Fighting Irish friends, you can sympathize. Because he kind of put that program in the dumps after he left too. He just leaves a stink everywhere he goes, you know, minus the Patriots. But I think that's because Belichick kept his crap in check, probably. But I think, you know, a lot of the issues arose from just Weiss's attitude. I think he maybe garnered a lot of respect from some of his players because he was a straight shooter, but I think his attitude towards preparation and towards talent, I think he just did enough to get by. And it doesn't take much at KU football-wise. Win us 6 games and we'll love you. Win us 7 games, a couple every once in a blue moon, you got a job. And you know what? If you can take a team like this to 6 games, guess what? Every program in the country is going to want to hire you. I'm hoping that we don't have instant success with Dave Beatty to some degree because I hope he doesn't leave. Because I think we've got a guy who's got a lot of high pedigree who KU was able to buy low on. not because he's not a talented head coach, but just because he was, I mean, he was a scouting coordinator, a recruiting coordinator, excuse me. And Beatty's going to be able to sell high on this if he really is able to turn this program around. And he's got time. I think he's got 4 or 5 seasons before we really need to see any market improvement. Because that's when you really get your guys in. And you've got the guys that you recruited as juniors and seniors that are leading the program. So it'll be interesting to see. But I'm just excited in general for this college football season. And I obviously don't really have any skin in the game in terms of a quality team that's contending for the national championships. But there's a lot of storylines. You know, we're talking about, you know, the Trojans are relevant for the first time in a while. Cody Kessler's a dark horse candidate for the Heisman. Vernon Adams just cleared to play and practice with Oregon and the Ducks and has a chance to be a starter. And it might be a Russell Wilson situation. Who knows? You've got Ohio State, who's a double-digit favorite in every single one of their games this season. And Braxton Miller's back. I wouldn't want Urban Meyer's job right now as good as they are. Deciding where to play guys when. Does Cardale Jones get to start? Who knows? Does Cardale Jones, if he does get to start, keep his job for the entire season? We don't know. It's going to be interesting. There's a lot of storylines, as there is every year with college football. I can't wait for the fall. It's going to be an exciting time, guys. You got college football. We're going to have Royals postseason. We're going to have the Chiefs hopefully kicking ass and taking names in their opening slate of games. And we play probably the 6 toughest games in the first 6 weeks of the season. So let me repeat. Royals baseball. Royals postseason baseball, excuse me. Chiefs start of the season. College football. The weather's changing. You can break out that flannel in just a couple of weeks, folks. Yard games. It won't be sweaty, hot tailgates anymore out of the ballpark. You'll have to put on a jacket. Those are the type of tailgates I like. I love summer. Summer's great. You get some tan, go out to the lake, enjoy some summery drinks, summer food. But I'm excited for fall, mostly because I'm out of shape and I like to wear layers. But it's just a great time of the year. And I'll be busy with school. But I'll find time to enjoy those other things. And I think everyone else who's busy with things should find time to enjoy those things too. Enjoy a night out at Kauffman during the postseason if you can find tickets. And I'm telling you, if you can find tickets for a good price, a price that you, in your mind, when you first hear that price, that number, you think maybe. If you think maybe, you should probably do it. I'm not saying you break the bank and you spend all the money you're going to spend on your kids' groceries or next month's rent or tuition on a postseason ticket. But I spent $200 on a World Series ticket last year to go with Tommy Watson and a few other of my friends. And Tommy Watson and I have been going to postseason games for years. Some of the most fun I'd ever had. But I'm going off on tangents again. I want to rein it back in. That's probably going to be it for the show tonight. But I just want to reiterate, fall's closing in, and it's going to be an exciting time. It's going to be fun. Next week, I'll hopefully have a guest. I'm going to try and figure out a way to get my good friend Aaron Moss on the show one of these days. He's expressed over and over again and time again that he wants to be on the show. So I'm going to figure out some way I can call into him and get him on, because I think he's going to offer a lot of really interesting insights to Mizzou football, what to expect from this season, who are some big names that you should know. Who are some names you don't know yet that you should? Maybe cue me into how the city of Chicago is doing right now. With the Chicago Cubs right in the middle of it. Likely one of the National League wildcard teams this year. First postseason appearance in I don't know how long. Is it? I think it's since the Steve Bartman catch. So that city will certainly be excited. And they'll probably have to play the Pittsburgh Pirates, who are another great story as they continue to be one of the best teams in baseball, as they have been for the last 2.5 seasons. So I'll hopefully get Aaron in here and we can talk some sports. And talk amongst other things, or talk about other things too. Because our conversations are never limited to just sports. And that's why I love talking to Aaron. He's a good guy to have him. Really good guy to have on the show, and we'll hopefully get him on next week. I just got to figure out the tech and how that's all going to work. We'll find a time we can get him on. Probably should have approved next week before before declaring it on the show, but I'm sure he'll find time as he acclimates to the city of Chicago. So anyways, that's going to do it for this edition of the Built on the Border podcast. If you guys absolutely hated listening to me talk solo, please let us know, because we want to make this as fun as and enjoyable for you guys as possible. And I think I did an okay job. I'm not calling myself the next Colin Cowherd by any means. It's hard to do this by yourself, but I'll hopefully figure it out. I see why when Ryan Russillo lost Scott Van Pelt to the Midnight Sports Center, he had Adnan Virk or Danny Cannell on pretty much every single day as his partner, because you can't do this for a half hour on your own, let alone for, you know, 3.5 hours for a full radio show that's nationally syndicated. So thanks for joining us this week. Going to play out the song that I just had to share with me today. It's called Adventure, by a group, I believe, called Cheat Codes, featuring some guy named Evan Gardner. My friend Devin sent it to me. Devin's one of the only people that actually sends feedback about the show. Send me emails with some suggestions. I'll just call them suggestions for what we should do on the show. But this is the first suggestion I've taken to heart, because he sent me this song via the Spotify application today, Spotify app. And I really liked it, so we're going to put it on the show. We hope you guys join us next week, as we'll start to talk, as we do every week, Royals baseball, Chiefs preseason action, hopefully some more stories developed. And we're going to talk about our thoughts on the new pumpkin sour ale from Boulevard Brewing Company. And I'll get some guys on to discuss. I'm not a fan of the pumpkin spice stuff. But anyways, thanks for joining us. I'm Tyler Randolph. Come back next week. Peace.
Give me something I won't forget. All I want is an adventure.